invited to take a seat. And if you've got a Bible there, which hopefully you've located now, maybe you'd like to turn to 1 Samuel 17. 1 Samuel 17. Somebody gets the page number, just yell it out. 1 Samuel 17 in your Bibles. 242? Page 242 in your pew Bibles, that'd be great. Not that we've got pews, but if we had them, that would be the one. 242. 1 Samuel chapter 17. Probably the most familiar story about David, and I would argue probably to people who may not ever come to church, probably a very familiar story to them too, the story of David and Goliath. It begins with a very formidable man, as you know, a man named Goliath, and he would have been very high on the rugby union selection list. I don't know if you saw Saracens, gentlemen, winning the European Cup yesterday at rugby. Well, if they could have got this guy on their team, it would have been all over in a moment. And he would have been a Philistine champion, one of the enemy nations of Israel. He was their champion. And he does what champions did in those days. You send out your champion, we'll send out Goliath, and it will be all over very quickly. That was the plan. And then there's the description of this man. There is a description of this man. He's over 9 feet tall. As we said, we think he's about 9 feet 6 inches, nearly 3 meters, as you saw a little bit of evidence of that on the step ladder, literally the top of the step ladder. He wore bronze helmet and scale armor, weighing somewhere around 175, 200 pounds, 65 kilos, literally the weight of a grown woman. No, Joe. I probably shouldn't have said that, should I? But there you go, okay. But the weight of, you know, a fully grown person, and he would wear and walk around in that and fight in that. This guy was so big. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod, it says, and its iron point alone, just the iron point, 25 pounds in weight. The spear at the end, the point at the end of his spear. This guy is no, you know, he's not a member of the WI, is he? This guy is formidable. Formidable and ominous and deeply scary. He's literally a giant. Now, the obvious guy to face Goliath was Saul. He's the obvious guy. Because if you read the Bible says he stood head and shoulders above all Israelites. He was an impressive figure. King Saul. But he wasn't going to do it. Apparently he wasn't up for any Acts of Courage award that particular year. So he decided he wasn't going to do it. So he offered a compensation package and he said, to any soldier willing to fight this man, this is all in 1 Samuel 17, to any soldier willing to fight this man, I will give great wealth and tax-exempt status for the rest of your life. And he said, I will let you marry my daughter. So apparently he's not up for the Father of the Year award either, because he's flogging off his daughter in order to get out of a difficult position. But for 40 days, it's interesting that term, 40 days, crops up a few times in the Bible, doesn't it? It's that waiting time between trouble and deliverance. For 40 days, Goliath kept up the challenge and nobody took Saul's offer and nobody faced him down. Meanwhile, as you know, 10 or 15 miles away in an obscure little village is a young man called David. He's been anointed king, as we saw last week, but because you can't really have two kings at the same time and it's usually bad for the health of one of them, and seeing as David is a kid, it would be bad for his health. He's doing something else in the meantime. And he is tending his father's sheep. And one day his father sends David to the battlefield with literally a packed lunch for his brothers. His impressive, handsome, fit, strong, big brothers. And David delivers their lunch to them. For 40 days, Goliath has been taunting the Israelites. They have been literally living in fear for 40 days, the whole army. But on the 41st day, all that was about to change. In fact, Saul's life was about to change. And Goliath's life was definitely about to change. Because a skinny little shepherd boy with a heart as big as the Jordan River changes everything forever. And this is the story about building a bold heart, a courageous heart. I think, well, I speak for myself, but I suspect I speak for most of you, all of us want courageous hearts. All of us want to find within ourselves great courage and faith to face down the challenges that we face. But if you look at the story of David carefully, you'll discover something. You'll discover something very key. And it is simply this, that it does take time to build a courageous and a bold heart. It takes time. David's boldness level had to start growing a long, long time before he ever faced this guy who was 9'6". And I think there's a big illusion that we face today about building up courage and faith, which is simply that when you face your moment of crisis, like your Goliath moment, we believe, don't we, that you will just suddenly develop courage in that moment, out of the blue. Can I be honest? It never happens that way. People who show courage have built courage over a long period of time, one step at a time. Courage does not just appear in a crisis. There is a story of a man who arrives at the pearly gates, and Peter says to him, well, looking at the list, the record of your life, I can't find that you did anything particularly good, and I'm struggling to find anything particularly bad on your list either. Can you tell me if there's anything impressive that you might have done in your life? One impressive thing that I can, you know, maybe let you in on. It's not very good theology because it's by grace that you enter, but I'd just go with the story. And the man says, well, one time I remember I saw some bikers menacing an innocent young woman. So I stopped my car. I leapt out of the car. I took a tire spanner out of the boot. And I walked up to their leader, who was a big, hairy guy with tattoos all over him. He had a nose ring. And I ripped the nose ring out from his nose. I reached up and I shouted in his face. I said, you leave this woman alone right now. I turned to all of his friends and I said, you better get out of here right now. Because if you don't get out of here, you are going to answer to me personally. Peter said, that is stunning and very amazing. When did this happen? The man replied, about 3 minutes ago. So if you wait until Goliath comes along, it probably won't go very well. If you wait for courage and you wait until Goliath is in front of you, it will not go very well. A bold heart has to be built a little bit every day, and that's what David did. That's what he did. We all want a bold heart like David. So I want to talk you through the steps that you might have to go through if you want a heart that can face some giants. It's never too late to start building that heart. The first thing is simply this, everyday challenges. You want to build a bold heart? Everyday challenges are where you begin. Every situation provides an opportunity to build courage in your life. All of those years that David was guarding sheep, just guarding sheep, that was his day job. It was the lowest job in the family, but he used it to build courage. Verse 34, look at verse 34. And David explaining to Saul why he's ready to take on Goliath. It's not that he's just found courage. He built that courage, and here's where he built it. Verse 34, your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or bear came along and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it. I struck it and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by the hair. I struck it and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of those, because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. Think about that for a moment. You're in a field, you're watching sheep. They're not even yours. You don't have to. You could. They're not your sheep. There's no personal loss to you. A bear comes along, you have no gun. You have a big stick and a sling. What do? David could have run, but David every time chose, as he started to build this heart, he chose to stay. David fought and David learned to be brave. Verse 37 doesn't say, I learned that I could defeat lions and bears. It doesn't say that, does it? David's not saying, I learned that I could defeat lions and bears. Listen to this. He says, I learned that God, who delivered me from lions and bears, could deliver me from this challenge too. He learned that he could trust God in situations. That's what he learned. Not trusting himself, trusting God. I want to tell you something. You can hear from this platform, from this lectern, you can hear God is faithful till you are blue in the face. And you could read God is faithful in hundreds of books and biographies. You can read it again and again. But the only way you come to believe God is faithful is if you test it in your life. That will be the only way you will actually really believe it, if you test it, like David. Lions and bears come after the sheep all the time. Maybe you have a difficult project at work and you could procrastinate a bit. You could blame somebody else. You could pass it on. You could bail. You could maybe even get away with doing all that. Or you could pray, God, in this everyday challenge, help me. I'm going after that. I'm going after this bear. It's scary. I don't like it, but I'm going after it. Because I can learn that you will walk with me if I do. If I walk away, I will never learn that. Maybe you're facing a parenting challenge. Maybe there's some behavioral trend that you're seeing in one of your kids, and it's going to take a lot of energy and a lot of effort to challenge that and to face it. And you'd rather just walk away from it. A lot of parents do. A lot of parents say, no, I'm not going after that particular bear. We'll just hope it goes away. Or you could say, God, with your help, I'm going after that bear. With your help, I'm going to defeat it. And if you do, you won't just read God is faithful. You won't just read God is big. You will experience it. And you will start to believe it. And you will build a bold heart. Tell you the truth about David, you and me. It was in everyday moments when nobody was watching, in an unglamorous role and job, that David started to build a bold heart. That's where it starts. Everyday, ordinary, unglamorous, that's where it starts. Here's the other thing, the other stage of building a bold heart, and it's simply this. Criticism and opposition. You build a bold heart when you experience criticism and opposition. Now, we don't like these very much. I hate them. I really hate criticism and opposition. Nothing phases me more. But the reality is, it's an opportunity to build a bold heart. Verse 26, look at verse 26. David sees this situation his people are in. So he asks this, what will be done for the one who kills the Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? They repeated to him what they had been saying and told him, this is what will be done for the man who kills him. And when Eliab, remember that's David's oldest brother, the impressive one, when Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger at him and asked, why have you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the desert? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came only to watch the battle. You came only to watch the carnage. Now, these are cheap shots, aren't they? Oh, well done, thanks. It's bought me coffin. Well done. It wasn't the coffin that got him. It was the coffin they carried him off in. Right, okay. I'll put that down there. Great, thank you. So they're cheap shots, aren't they? Eliab's taking... So what has Dad... Dad sent him. Dad sent him with lunch. And Dad sorted out... They sorted out someone to look after the sheep. None of this criticism is actually true in any shape or form. David had been sent by his father. The sheep were being cared by somebody else. None of this stuff was true. So why does Eliab behave like this to David? And this is something you'll experience if you start getting courageous. You will experience this. I think it was because every time that Goliath came out and issued this challenge and insulted the army of Israel and insulted their God, and every time Eliab refused to rise to it, he felt a little bit more like a coward every single day. And that happened not for one day or 5 days or 10, but for 40 days, Eliab was made to feel like a coward again and again and again and again. So when David comes along and that sort of shone a floodlight on his own timidity, and Eliab hated that. So what was his response? He was angry. Who was he angry at? I think he was angry at himself. But as often happens with anger, it sort of gets displaced. And we fire it off at other people around us to make ourselves feel better. In the face of David's courage, Eliab is ashamed. And that's why he reacts like he does. Fear will do that to you, won't it? Fear will do that to you. One of the most important reasons to be bold. If you cower before Goliath long enough, whatever your Goliath is, if you keep cowering in front of your Goliath, it will eat you up one day at a time. It will destroy your self-esteem one day at a time. That's what was happening for Eliab. That's what happens to us when we just keep ducking day after day. And it's probably, you can probably get away with it so long as you're surrounded by other people who are behaving exactly the same way, who are being afraid too. But when somebody who dares to challenge your Goliath comes along, you feel horrendous by comparison. It shines a spotlight. And you need to do something to bolster your flagging self-esteem now. So what do? Usually you become very angry. And you become really resentful. That's what happens. Goliath was doing a good job. Listen, Goliath was doing a really good job at killing Eliab bit by bit, day after day, without laying a finger on him. Eliab was dying bit by bit. That fear was just eating away his self-esteem day after day. That's what happens if you duck your giants. So David faces totally unfair criticism and opposition because of what's going on inside Eliab. How do you respond to that? Because you will experience that if you suddenly, well, not suddenly, but if you gradually build this bold heart, you will face that because you'll be doing things that people around you aren't doing and they feel awkward about that. How do you respond to that sort of criticism? David could have wasted all of his time fighting his brother, couldn't he? He could then have got into a big debate with his brother. Do you see what he does? Verse 29. Now what have I done, said David. Can't I even speak? That's his entire sum of energy he spends on this. And he walks away. That's all the energy he spends on this. I love that. He states his position, he turns away, he doesn't let it touch him. It's like water off a duck's back. He does not allow unfair criticism to have any power over him, to distract him, to sap him of energy or focus. He doesn't let it happen. And he just walks away. And his heart gets a little bit bolder. So let me ask you, how do you deal with criticism? How do you cope with criticism? Unfair criticism. Show of hands, over the last 10 years, how many of you have been criticised at least once? Show of hands. It'd be a miracle if you haven't. If you haven't, can I be honest with you? Be careful. If you haven't been criticised, there are plenty of quotes around that saying, if you haven't been criticised, you haven't been living. You haven't been living. How do you handle it when you were criticised? Did you spend a lot of energy and time on the person who criticised you? David doesn't. You know, criticism falls into two categories. When you're criticised, here's the two categories. There are only two. It's either accurate or it's inaccurate. There's no middle ground. It's true or it's false, right? This is really simple. If it's inaccurate, dismiss it and walk away like David. Don't spend time on it. Don't spend energy and effort on it. Dismiss it and walk away because it's not true. If it's accurate, fix what needs to be fixed and then move on. That's how you deal with criticism. But what you don't do is let it cause you to lose heart. What you don't do is let criticism get you sidetracked and distracted and let it eat away at you. That's the worst solution. Tell you something, when you get serious about facing your giants, your Goliaths, and when you get serious about trusting God, when you start to build a bold heart one step at a time, there will be a very high likelihood that some people around you will criticize you. They will. You're going to face some criticism, sometimes from those you know and love, from people close to you. You can give up and lose heart. You can get defensive and spend the rest of your life trying to straighten them out. And I don't know if you've noticed, trying to straighten other people out is actually quite tricky. Or you can just get on with what God has told you to do and leave it there. Build a bold heart in the face of criticism and opposition. And criticism and is an opportunity for you to build that heart. It is. Here's the third bit. It's how David did it. He also resisted pressure to conform. That's how he built courage in his life. Pressure to conform, to do what everybody else thought he should do. Saul hears about what's going on. David is brought before the king. This kid, this shepherd, no status, nothing. And he's brought before the king. Verse 32, David said to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him." I suspect there were some sniggers going on in the tent at that moment. Saul replied, "You're not able to go out against the Philistine and fight him. You're only a boy." And he was only a boy. "And he's been a fighting man since he was a youth. It's amazing that David has the courage. I'm finding it amazing just in that walking into the tent of royalty as a kid and saying what he said to that king. That just proves the boldness of this kid. Can you imagine somebody doing that? You walk into the boss's office and you do this. And then Saul says this, which we think could have been tongue-in-cheek. He says, go ahead, and may the Lord be with you. I suspect he said it in that manner. Verse 38, it's kind of a funny scene. Saul dresses David in his own tunic. He put a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened on his sword over the tunic and tried to walk around in them because he was not used to them. I can't go in these, he said to Saul, because I'm not used to them. So he took them off. I mean, hang on. King Saul, famous warrior, handsome big guy, general of an army, tells you how to fight, and you go, nah, I'm not doing that. Little shepherd boy, well, I'm not doing that. Expert was just ignoring him. So he took them off. He took his staff in his hand, chose five smooth stones from the stream. Is that a tongue twister in the Bible? Okay. And he put them in a pouch of his shepherd bag, and with his sling in his hand, he approached the Philistine. I mean, just the courage of getting out there on that field in the way that he did is amazing. Remember, Saul is a king, a general, a fighter by nature and by history and experience. And David is a little kid who looks after sheep. And he's saying to the expert in the room, with all the authority and the clout, no, I'll do it my way. Amazing. It would have been really easy for David to say, well, yeah, Saul knows more than I do, so he's been at it longer, I'll do it his way. David knew something really, really important. Listen to this. He knew himself. He knew himself. You could be very courageous if you know yourself. You know what you're good at, and you know what you're not good at. Know where your strengths and your weakness lie. And he knew his enemy. He knew that when he went to face Goliath, it wouldn't be, Saul wouldn't be there. Saul isn't going to be next to him, coaching him. Saul is going to be as far away as he can be in a tent back there behind his troops. David knew it's going to be me and this guy. So I better know myself and I better know the God who is with me. And that'll do. Saul was not going to be there. And when you go to face your Goliath, you may have wonderful fellowship and community in your life. But often, you know, here's the truth. When you face your Goliath, you often face it. Just you and that. Whatever it is, it's you and that. At the end of the day, isn't it? You and God and Goliath. That's it. That's what you have to face it with. At the end of the day, you have to choose how you will go into battle. You have to choose. And don't let other people tell you how to do it. Often when faced with our Goliaths, we scour the bookshelves and we look for some expert to come along and coach us and who will relieve us maybe of the pressure of having to make a decision based on what I know about me and what I know about the situation. But we'll delegate it as much as we can because we're scared. We want somebody else to choose our armor. It doesn't work that way. I want you to know, as you face the great battles in your life, that this is your life. Don't delegate it. Don't give it away to somebody else to tell you how to run it. This is your life. You and God. And together you face these things. Nobody else can choose your weapons for you. Not a pastor or a teacher or a boss or a friend or a parent. These are your gifts. This is your time. This is your possessions. This is your mind. This is your calling from God. And with him, use what he's given you. And God just longs for some people that will have a bold enough heart to do it his way instead of looking around at everybody else and saying, what would you do? And saying, God, what would you do? What do you want me to do? What have you given me? What can I use? And have the courage just to do that. God is looking. That's why God chose David. Because David was a guy who said, God, what do you think? Knowing me and knowing you, what do you think? And that was enough. That's why God chose him. That's why God loved him. God loves it when people follow him with a heart that's bold enough to withstand the pressure around them to conform and to do it according to who they are and who God is, full stop. Here's the last one. You build a hot, bold heart. Oh, sorry, there's a little illustration of that. There you go. You build a bold heart in crisis moments. Now that's the end of the story. Remember, that's a journey. Crisis moments at the end of it, not the beginning. That's where the courage finally comes to fruition. But after all the other stuff has happened first. David stands before Goliath, verse 41. Meanwhile, the Philistine, with his shield bearer, kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and he saw that he was only a boy, ruddy and handsome, and he despised him. He said to David, am I a dog that you come at me with sticks? The Philistine cursed David by all of his gods. Come here, he said, and I'll give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. Standard humiliation tactics for a one-on-one punch-up between champions. Verse 45, David said to the Philistine, he said, you come against me with a sword and a spear and a javelin, but I've come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will hand you over to me, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. And he does. Today I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds of the air and the beasts of the earth. And the whole army will know there is a God. There is a God in Israel. Summary of the whole story is really verse 45. Look at that. You come at me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. Now, I don't know what your Goliaths are. They'll all be different in this room. Everybody will have one. But it's in the category of sword and javelin and spear. That's what it's in. It's in that category. Sword, javelin, spear. Looks scary, admittedly, but it's in that category. And it is nothing that the Lord cannot handle. I don't know what your Goliath is. Maybe it's health. But I believe it's still possible to come in the name of the Lord Almighty against sickness. And sickness has no answer to that. Maybe it's failure, because some people are paralyzed all their lives in fear of failure. But it has no answer. It has no answer to the Lord of Israel's army. Maybe it's a difficult person. Maybe that's your Goliath. Maybe you have a personal Goliath. Maybe it's a vocational decision and you're afraid to make a call and a choice and a step. I don't know what your Goliath is, but I know this. I know that if you let Goliath intimidate you and convince you to run away, day after day after day, like the Israelites did, you, like Eliab, will die a little bit every day. That's one choice. Do you want to do that? Do you want to die a little bit every day? Without it ever laying a hand on you, but you die a little bit every day. You lose heart and your life is too precious to God. And the battle is too important for anybody to go down that road. That is not an option. I know if you turn and face your Goliath like David did, even with small things like a stone and a confidence in God, your Goliath doesn't stand a chance. Because one little stone in the hand of God is stronger than anything that this world can throw against you. I believe that. I believe we've been singing about this huge, amazing, stunning God. I think if you just give him a stone, he will use it. Take a moment just to seal this. The writer is so keen that you get this message, he repeats it. Let me repeat it to you. Verse 37. The Lord, who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear, will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine. Verse 45. You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord. The Lord Almighty, the God of heaven's armies, whom you have defied. Verse 47. All those gathering here will know that it is not by the sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. He just keeps repeating the phrase. Who's behind it all? Who's behind it? Friends, this is not a story about David. It's not a story about his courage with a sling. It's not about a story about his courage or his willingness to take a risk. This, in the end, if you keep reading those verses, is not a story about anybody other than the Lord. This is a story about God. And the story of your life is not a story about your courage and your skill and your willingness to take a risk. It is, if you will let it be, it is a story about God, and it is a story about the power that God wants to unleash in your life if you let him. It's about God and how much you trust him. Only God could get David through what David went through. Not a stone or a sling or a bright idea. Only God got David through that. Something this big. Only God. And God is still in the business of delivering David's from Goliath's today. I don't know how big your Goliath is, but I will guarantee you simply this. Your Goliath is not as big as God. This is about God. Your mountain is not bigger than God. He is bigger than it all. That's what the writer wants you to know. And you build a bold heart, not because you're particularly good or clever or courageous. You build a bold heart because you trust God. Because you trust he's bigger than the Goliath that you face. There's a wonderful song by Wren Collective, one of our favourite bands at the moment, and it simply says, every giant will fall. I wonder if you believe that. I believe that in this life or in the next, at the end of the day, every giant falls before God. It does say in the Bible that at the end of history, every knee bows, every tongue confesses that Jesus Christ is the Lord, gives him homage, worships him. The question is, will we start doing that now, or will we wait until then? Let's listen to this song together and just think about your Goliaths, your giant, as you listen to this song. Yeah, Heather, come on out. No, that's all right. Yeah.
I had a giant. It was fear, and to a degree it ruined my life. Most of you know my story, but there were so many traumatic events, and the big world outside spelled horror and trouble, so I locked myself away. And I now realise that that giant is gone, and I put God's armour on, and he strengthens me, and through my belief in God, he's brought me through. He gave me a vision of how well I would be, and Phil's right about how long it takes. It took years. It took as long as I was ill to where I'm slowly reaching now. But if anybody here is going through such stuff, hang in there.
Okay? Amen. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you, Heather.
It does take time to build that courage, but you do it one step at a time. And God is bigger. God is bigger than your giants. Have a look at this and think about your giants. Maybe pray about your giants. You've got a chance for a moment just to pray about your giant as you listen to these words.